do.
Welcome to First Off, Let's Kill All the Lawyers. That oft misquoted Shakespearean phrase from the 1500s, but as many people will still say today, it's probably not a bad start. I'm David Heffernan. I've been practicing law for about 30 years here in South Florida. And the goal behind this broadcast is to bring lawyers in that maybe shouldn't be on that kill list and let you meet some of the local lawyers in this town, talk about what they do, talk about some trending things in law, and just overall kind of educate on various aspects. My guest today, pretty easy one. If you look at the name of the law firm, it's Karen Heffernan. Well, he's Karen, I'm Heffernan. So that puts the law firm together. But good friend of mine, I've known Mark my entire legal career since we went to law school together. But Mark, welcome.
Thanks, Dave. And actually, when you said 30 years practicing, our graduation was about 30 years ago this weekend. So
good Lord.
Time flies or something like that.
It does. It does. So let's talk a little bit about you. What was your journey to get into law? I mean, what was the decision between, you know, for law school and then kind of how did the career go from there?
Like, candidly, I think I was too dumb to do anything else. So stumbled into law school, really had no direction when I went to law school. And thankfully, my brother-in-law was a practicing lawyer in Miami, and he had a workers' compensation and personal injury firm. And he was kind enough to give me a job both in law school and coming out of law school. So I worked there for a while and went out on my own. Shortly thereafter, I opened up my practice in 1997. And was on my own. And then you and I joined up probably almost about 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is an interesting story. Mark and I had stayed in touch, since law school. But then Mark got a very interesting case of a guy who broke his neck in a World Indoor Football League.
Exactly.
And so given my background, you know, sort of asked me to help with that case and things went very well.
And I think at the same time, we were probably working on that negligent security case. I don't know which one came first, but we had the negligent security case as well. And we worked on both those cases. And the next thing I knew, we were partners.
Yeah, no, it worked out well. Very similar, I think, in background and everything else. Oddly enough, you know, you've been married a long time. It's now my 32nd wedding anniversary today. So
happy anniversary.
Talk about how long.
Yeah.
But, you know, three kids and sort of that stability of life, which I think is important.
100%.
All right. So let's talk about one of the things, obviously, that we do in our practice between you and I, thousands and thousands of automobile cases.
Right.
Right now, Florida is on the verge of probably the most sweeping changes in automobile insurance law in the last 50 years. So Senate Bill 54 has passed the House, and the Senate is now just waiting for the governor's signature. But let's talk about that a little bit, because we hear the phrases a lot. So Florida, up until maybe this January, assuming the governor signs it, has been a no-fault state. So what does that mean?
Sure. Well, what does the no-fault portion of it mean?
Yeah. In other words, what was the law in Florida? Because it is unique. I think Florida is only one of a handful of states that actually still has no fault.
I believe it's one of two. And the backwardation of the system is, I guess it is what it says, no fault. So in Florida, you were and still are currently, until the governor signs the law,
right,
responsible for payment of your own medical bills. So if you're in an accident and the accident is not your fault, your insurance company, known as your PIP carrier, your no fault carrier, will pay 80% of your medical bills up to $10,000. And with that PIP requirement, I think it's twofold, right? So Florida, I think, again, was one of only two states that doesn't require a driver to have bodily injury liability coverage in effect. So all you need in order to drive a car in Florida is the minimum requirements of PIP, which is for payment of your own medical bills, and to replace someone else's car, property damage of $10,000. Even that is so outdated, because right now you're talking about a fender bender in Florida on any car is going to exceed $10,000. So one was outdated, the system itself, and then the minimum requirements were likewise outdated.
Yeah, which is bizarre when you look at it, because those minimum requirements, I think, were put in place in 1972. So you haven't changed those numbers since 1972.
Insane.
So the odd thing is, and we see it a lot in our practice, because people come in and they say, no, I'm fully insured.
Right.
But so if I understand what you're saying, to be fully insured in Florida now, you don't have to have any insurance that covers you if you cause an accident.
That's correct. You just have to have coverage to pay for the damage to somebody else's car, but not the damage that you may have caused that other person.
Right. So you get, you know, you seriously hurt somebody.
Right.
You're still fully insured by the laws of Florida.
Correct.
But you have to have no insurance that protects you.
Correct.
That's a little bizarre. So let's talk about this change, because like I said, probably the biggest change in 50 years in this law. As it has now passed the House and Senate, what is the law going to be in Florida to be insured now?
Sure. So the law will now require you to carry 2550. We use those numbers, right? So 25,000 per person, 50,000 in total for bodily injury liability coverage. So now if you cause an accident, you are going to be responsible for paying the person that you injured. You're going to have a minimum of 25,000 bodily injury liability coverage to compensate that one person. And if there's three people in the car or four people, they would get a combined 50,000. So you're forcing the drivers to now carry bodily injury liability insurance to compensate the injured party. It's also going to shift the payment of the medical bills. So the payment of the medical bills were assumed to be paid in the old system by your own carrier under that PIP. Now, the person who is injured will either have his health insurance pay those medical bills. You can purchase the MedPay policy. You can purchase that when you purchase your auto coverage. So MedPay can pay your medical bills, or you will pay it from a settlement.
Okay.
So your medical bills will be paid in one of three ways in the event that you're involved in an accident now.
And I saw in a lot of the debate, the issues being raised by the House and the Senate talked about with the PIP scheme being, you know, your medical bills, you know, that $10,000 being covered, that was an area that was ripe for fraud.
Right.
And I think we've seen a lot of that with staged accidents and some of those lawyers that should be on that list to be killed, you know, that have deals with accident clinics.
Yes.
And everything else, because it was almost an automatic, here's $10,000.
Right.
If I got into a little minor fender bender.
So that to me is the most important part of this change. One, having the bodily injury liability coverage, I think, is great, and increasing the limits also for property damage is going to be helpful. But the most important part, I think, which hurts you and I, and it hurts people that are legitimately injured, because you're listening to accidents 24/7 from these accident clinics.
Right.
And by the way, these accident clinics aren't just advertising. There are some good clinics, right? There are some doctors that are in this to actually treat and help people and make them better. But there are a number of clinics that have exploited the PIP system to the max. And they have used runners. They do everything that lawyers aren't supposed to do, right?
Right.
So they contact clients. They get the police report. They offer people money to come treat at their clinic. So when you and I walk into a courtroom with an auto case, jurors may have been involved in an accident before and have been illegally contacted, illegally recruited, paid money to come to a clinic. So you and I are always walking in with a little bit, we're behind walking in, because people are looking at us like, well, how do we know you're not associated with one of those clinics? How do we know that this is real? So I think getting rid of that will be terrific. And it should cut down on a lot of fraud, because you had a lot of people that might have been involved in a minor fender bender that were not injured, got a call from a clinic, come treat with us, we'll pay you some money, right? Because how many times have you had a client come into your office and say, I heard I'm entitled to $10,000?
Oh, sure.
For my accident, right? They're confusing the PIP benefits that the doctor is going to get with money that they're entitled to get.
So it's going to be very telling to see how that changes the landscape. And are we going to see a decrease in some of these advertising, you know, campaigns that are going, you know, been in an accident, call us, call us, call us.
I would think so, because they depend on the cash flow to fund that advertising.
Right.
And if the cash flow isn't there from the PIP insurance, those cases aren't going to be as valuable to them as they have been. And actually, we still need the governor to sign the bill, right?
Well, that's so true.
We're still waiting on the governor to sign it. Hopefully he will.
It's two-thirds of the way there.
You know, I had read one of the stats that they were relying on that the insurance industry cited as reason for keeping the PIP scheme in place. And they were saying that I think 42 or 43% of the population or the drivers would see an increase in their rates. Does that mean 58% or 59% are going to see a decrease?
Well, that's
their rates that they're not even talking about.
That's going to be the big question, because I've seen, and the estimates are that somewhere between 35 to 45% of the drivers don't carry at least that 25-50. Okay. And so they're saying that population, you would only make sense. Well, sure, absolutely have to see an increase. But the question is then, people that have carried, and I've carried those limits, you carry those limits well above those for all these years, is it going to now decrease for us?
It should, right? I mean, that the cited statistic had been the one that we and I just that you and I just discussed, the 41 or 42% that are going to see an increase. I'm curious to see the 58 that should be receiving a decrease.
Right.
That, of course, if the insurance industry isn't mentioning it, that leads me to believe that, yes, in fact, 58% will probably see a decrease.
Yeah, you want to bet on that?
Right.
our insurance bills are not going down. Right. Okay.
Right. They'll figure out a way.
I can promise you.
They'll figure out a way.
That's the other concern that I've seen is so, unfortunately, we live in a state right now where about one in five drivers don't carry any insurance, right, despite what the law says.
Right.
So I think some of the concern with this was, well, if we've already got one in five and now you're going to make it more expensive for them, are we going to see more drivers just not carry insurance?
You know, David, that's a troubling question. And because, yes, there are people that are out there struggling financially that do everything they can to hold on to a car. And now you're saddling them with a burden of perhaps an additional insurance cost. But I think the problem is really twofold with the insurance. One, there is no enforceability, right? So how many times again, we've had people come into our office, we get a police report, insurance canceled, insurance suspended. So a lot of times people will purchase that insurance policy in order to get the registration, make one payment on it, and then the insurance lapses.
Right.
So yes, they are driving around without insurance and perhaps their license will be suspended if they get pulled over. But there's no immediate enforcement. There's no mechanism by which the state actually enforces and tracks down people that are driving uninsured. So I think part of what needs to happen is, yes, the first step is changing from the no-fault system to the mandatory bodily injury liability system. But two, we have to do something about enforceability. I mean, you can't just make one payment on your insurance, get your registration, and then boom, that's it. Now you're uninsured again because you're going to be in this vicious cycle of, again, nobody having insurance.
Right. And we see it a lot, not just – obviously you have to have that to get registered. And you're right. There's no follow-up on that. There's no annual. The state doesn't say you're required to send us proof of insurance. You had it when you registered the vehicle, and that's all that matters.
Right.
You also see that a lot of time with leased vehicles because the companies that lease them require you to carry 100, 300 most times. Problem with that, again, they do it. They lease the car. Then there's no enforceability to follow up to say, are you maintaining that insurance on the vehicle?
Right. I think with the lease, they might, though. Don't they have some form of force place coverage? Won't you get a letter if you've got a leased vehicle that, hey, we received notice that your insurance has lapsed, or are they only going to put on comprehensive and collision, or who knows?
I don't know. I mean, they do that. Look, mortgage companies are very smart about that. Mortgage companies will do that and put it in place and say, you know, because that's part of the contract, and it might be in the lease. Part of the contract says you have to show proof of insurance.
Right.
But they're listed, and I think the automobile carriers are also listed, but I don't know if it's enforced.
Right.
Because if it lapses, they're supposed to be listed on that policy so they get notification.
Correct.
So the big thing is, you know, what's going to happen with that? Let's talk a little bit about something you talked about this morning.
Right.
Traffic.
Yeah, it's back. It's back.
one of the great, you know, favorable byproducts of the pandemic was traffic decreased dramatically.
The only favorable thing about the pandemic was traffic. I remember I was making it to the office, you know, from Aventura to Brickell. I was making it in 15, 20 minutes, no traffic. I was one of the, you know, few cars on the road this morning, gridlock.
Yeah. Well, it's back.
It's back.
So, so let's just talk about the average citizen. How's this, if this changes, how's that going to affect them? You know, are you going to be required to go out and get that insurance now? Or again, there's the enforceability.
Right.
I own my car. Let's say I just carry PIP now. Obviously, that's not going to be sold anymore.
Right.
Is it going to be, how is the state going to require me to make sure that I've got that new insurance?
You know, I don't know. I think we'll have to wait for the governor to sign the bill, and there should be a date of enforceability on there, right? And it won't apply retroactively.
No, it'll be effective
forward, usually October 1st, right?
Well, if he signs it the law will go into place January 1st.
Okay, so the law will go into place January 1st. So effective January 1st, I think all those policies will then have to be amended, I suspect, to comply with the new law. So if you've got an old policy that's set to expire in February or March, your policy would have to be amended to add bodily injury liability coverage and drop perhaps PIP coverage.
Right. So the question is that something that's somehow going to be enforceable? I'm assuming the insurance companies are going to have to notify you.
Right.
Oh, by the way, that coverage doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Here's the alternative.
Correct.
But whether that gets registered somehow by the state to be enforced?
Well, it's the same now, right? So we often write when we get a police report and we have a client come to our office who's involved in an accident, and on the police report, there's no insurance listed. We often write to the state of Florida, and their database is candidly, you know, Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles is really terrible. You know, we get insurance information for 3 years in the past, which I find hard to believe. I don't know how it's that far back. So I can't remember the last time we wrote to them and actually got valuable information back.
Oh, I don't think I ever have.
Right. Saying, no, this person does have insurance, and here's with who he has insurance currently.
Right.
It's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, we do the due diligence to try to find that. But right. Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a response that says,
yeah, here we
oh, no, it. Here. Yeah, we yeah, found your policy. Found
so you know. If they don't have the information, or at least aren't providing, obviously they don't have it because they're not providing it to us when we request it. That's where it has to start. They have to get that information and then do something with it to notify people. We've received information that your policy has lapsed. If you don't get coverage right away, X, Y, and Z can happen to you, including suspension of your driving privileges.
Well, and I think that's going to be the biggest thing, because until there's some teeth in there and people do start getting their license suspended right. for some period of time, it's a step in the right direction for right. sure. But
and then at some point, does it just make more sense for people to say, you know what, between what I have to pay for my car, gas, registration, insurance, maintenance, am I better off taking an Uber every day to work? I don't have to worry about parking. I don't have to worry about all those incidental expenses. I don't have the stress. You know what? Maybe I'll just take an Uber every day.
And I think you're starting to see that. I mean, again, at least before the pandemic, and now I think you'll obviously see Uber and all of that coming back.
Right.
But the mindset of that generation is, what do I need to own a car?
Correct.
I mean, I have a car pick me up, take me wherever I want.
Right.
And I don't have any of the headache of it.
And it's cheaper.
Right.
It might be cheaper, depending obviously on how far you live and what kind of car you drive. But it might be cheaper. And if you've got a couple of tickets on your license or had your license suspended, insurance is going to be expensive for you. So you might just say, forget it. It's not worth it.
And this is not a paid endorsement for Uber or Lyft or anything else.
Yeah. any mode of public transportation. But I think what you've seen coming out of the pandemic is obviously car sales are through the roof.
Right.
And I think people kind of want to drive their own car, or at least be in an Uber by themselves. I don't think they want to be in public transportation if they can avoid it.
Right. Which is interesting, because again, a lot of the things with the pandemic, yeah, you see car sales through the roof, boat sales. People right. want a vehicle somehow to get outside of their home
correct.
and still be safe.
Correct.
You know, I mean, I can sit in my own car, I can drive it and clear my head and go from there. Right. So, well, interesting. So we see that shift. You know, it'll be interesting. And I think to follow, are we going to see a decrease for the people that have already carried those limits and done the right thing and protected themselves? Or are we going to see the same?
Yeah, like you said, I can't recall ever getting a decrease from my insurance carrier ever.
Right.
So at least give me one initially. Let me get one at least the first time and then raise my rates. Let me for once get a decrease. But you're right. It'll be interesting to see what happens. We probably won't know for a couple of years, but step one is getting it signed. I think it makes sense. It does make sense for sure. I think you're going to reduce the number of claims for sure.
Yeah. It certainly makes sense, because again, if it's followed and we don't see the number of totally uninsured people increase, you know, but if it's followed, yeah, there's coverage for people. In other words, you now have to be more accountable. You cause an accident,
right?
You're being accountable, saying, okay, I'm providing these benefits, which again, in the vast majority of cases, hopefully should be adequate. You know, obviously some it's not. If you have a devastating injury or anything sure. else, it's going to be a whole different animal, but having people insured, I think, is a benefit.
And like we said, it's twofold. It's one, having that person insured, but two, you're cutting down on the person that might not be injured, that has now been solicited
right.
to go to a clinic and start treating for the benefit of the clinic, and perhaps an illegal kickback. I'll use the word kickback or contribution
right.
to the alleged injured party. So just getting rid of that segment of the population, getting rid of those cases has to be a tremendous benefit to the insurance carriers, to the insurance companies.
And that's what most of the politicians have said because right. because of the fraud. And it has been a pretty rampant thing.
Yep.
And you're right. It's easy to see, you know, and it's, you know, if you go, it's, you know, you sit in your doctor's office, you know, for a half hour before seeing the doctor right. and they've got the TV on there.
Yep.
It's amazing the amount right. of clinics and everything else that are all advertising and
with misleading commercials, since they're not regulated by the Florida bar.
Right.
The commercials tend to be misleading and you may be entitled to $10,000 in benefits. How many times have you heard that?
Right.
You are not entitled to $10,000 in benefits. Your doctor is going to be entitled to $10,000. You're not entitled to a penny of it.
Yeah. But they all think.
But they all think.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you pick them up and so, yeah, we'll see that eliminated. And it was interesting because I went back and I looked at the history of the whole PIP. And it was actually two professors in a Harvard Law Review. And the theory at the time was that it would decrease all of the claims because everybody had to have their own insurance.
Right.
Okay. Which, again, in theory sounds right, except you're still having no responsibility for what you've caused.
Correct.
So and again, it's just antiquated. I mean, that goes back into the early 70s or when they started this. So
the No Fault Act, I think, went in, was it 1982?
I think
or was
so.
It amended in 82? I know it.
I think it actually started in the 70s, but I think it was amended in 82. And yeah, I mean, we haven't seen any significant change in
so
the law.
Think about that. Those limits have been in place since at least 1982.
Right.
Those limits of $10,000 for your own medical bills and for property damage since 1982.
Why? You tell me medical bills and expenses have gone up since 1982?
I mean, one ER visit, you know, a couple of CAT scans, yeah. an ER visit. We've seen bills $40,000, $50,000 for a one-day ER visit.
Right.
So what are you accomplishing with $10,000 of PIP? Absolutely nothing.
Right. So now the question, though, becomes with hospitals and everything else, you know, what are they going to do when people don't have health insurance?
Right.
You know, I mean, is this now going to become more of a burden on Jackson and everything else? Because unfortunately, you know, we've still got a lot of people that don't have health insurance in this country.
Right. No, that's true. And I know the hospital lobby really was in favor of keeping the PIP system the way it was, because for them, the reimbursement rate on the PIP claims was much greater than it was
right.
on some other health insurers.
Well, yeah. And look, at least it covered that ER visit, you know,
correct.
Initially when they came in so they could do the scans and all of that. So
right.
it'll be interesting to see how that affects.
Right.
All right. So let's talk about your practice. You talked about getting into workers' comp and PI, and that's what you've done your entire career.
Well, yeah, that's how we started. I actually didn't do much of the workers' comp when I was working with my brother-in-law. I was doing the personal injury. They had a really nice personal injury firm that I was able to step into. A couple of his partners had left, so I was able to step in and had a lot of active cases. And I worked there I started actually in law school, so I probably started like in 1989 until I went out on my own in 1997. And when I went out on my own again, started with just the auto cases, did some workers' comp, and then slowly transitioned into some more personal injury stuff, the negligent security stuff, and the medical malpractice.
So what gives you, and it's easy, and we can all talk about, oh, that's the grind of practicing lawyers, but what gives you satisfaction in practicing law?
I don't think it's a particular case. I think it's a particular outcome for a particular client. So we do have occasions, you and I have had the occasion
right.
where you have been able to change someone's life. Unfortunately, those are cases where money is probably not going to fix the situation, right? You've dealt with some devastating injuries.
Oh, sure.
And
sure.
you have dealt with an injury with tragically injured, a brain injury to a young gal. So while you weren't able to bring her back to what she was like before, you know, you did everything possible to make her life going forward better. And without your help, she wouldn't be as well off as she is today. Right.
100%.
You and I had the same experience with our negligent security case. Granted, our client was a paraplegic and he will never be able to live the life that he was living before, but we did everything possible to ensure that his life going forward was as good as it could be. And without our help, he wouldn't have as good a life as he has now. So those are the cases where you feel good at the end of the day. You feel sad for the person that's gone through the tragedy because they're never going to be able to get their life back, but you've done everything possible to give them the best possible life going forward.
Well stated. And I think that is the joy in seeing what you've been able to do. And again, in the system we have, it's a compensation system, but you've given them the best opportunity. And, right. And we see clients come back who are now, he's paraplegic, but he's gotten businesses. He's thriving. He's adapted in a situation where in both the cases you've referenced, if we weren't able to do those things, I don't know if either one of them would still be alive today.
Probably not.
Right.
Because I remember the one client that we're discussing, the negligent security case, in the condition that we found him. I remember when I first went to meet him, the physical condition that he was in, his living conditions, they were horrible. I mean, he was living a life that he was destined for death.
Powerful stuff. And that's what makes Mark and I continue to go to the office every day. And we'll sit and watch with everybody else as these law, assuming the governor signs it, that's going to be the law in Florida. And big, big changes in automobile law for the first time in a long time in Florida. But listen, been a pleasure. I think I'll see you soon.
I'll see you in the office.
At the office. But we'll be back next week and we'll talk more about different aspects of law. And hopefully we've gotten Mark Care off the, first off, let's kill all the lawyers. So
yes.
Have a great week and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, David. Great job.